Let's do it this way. Genesis.
Exodus. Leviticus. Numbers. Joshua.
That's far enough. Joe got me tickled. He says Job, and then he says second Job. I don't know what he said. He lost me. I think it was Ezra. I totally lost the track when Joe said second Ezra or whatever that was. That was good, Joe. I like that. All right. David and I have been talking a lot about the very nature of what we do here on Sunday night and the combination of trying to do drills and trying to do teaching and all the rest. And so... any feedback you've got about the kinds of things we do on Sunday night would really be helpful. We haven't done a whole lot of drills on Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy because the questions are not readily available like they would be in Genesis and Exodus. Different type of thing. I mean, punishment for this and punishment for that and punishment for this. That doesn't take a rocket scientist to find the answers to all of those. I mean, here's what I want us to do tonight, though. I want us to... try to envision what we've been studying, especially in Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, and put the Bible emphasis on these events. I mean, you know the story. I don't have to tell you about the Exodus. You may have trouble naming the plagues, but you know how many plagues there are. I mean, you know how many plagues, and you even know what the last plague is, and you know about the lamb, and you know where the blood was placed. You know about the crossing of the Red Sea. You know about the pillar of fire and the cloud that overshadowed them. You know all of those things. You know about Mount Sinai, and you know the Ten Commandments, and I suspect you could come up with 8 or 9 of the commandments, you know, especially once you got to the thou shalt not, you know. I mean, we know those Ten Commandments. And we know the very thing we talked about, and that is when they get up to Kadesh Barnea and they send out the spies, and the spies come back and say, we're not able to take the promised land, and all the things that happen out there in the wilderness. Now, here's the emphasis that we need to place in our minds. Clayton, I miss you not being up here. I know you're back there. I miss your cute comments, okay? So next time we'll move over in that direction, I want you in the front so I can hear your cute comments, okay? But you understand what I'm talking about. We need to have the Bible emphasis. Now, what emphasis does the Bible place on the Exodus? And what Bible emphasis is there in the New Testament, what I'm talking about, on all of these events there in the wilderness? And that's not really a hard question to think about. Now, all these things happen unto them for examples, the old King James, in samples. And they are written for our admonition. Look, you got a Bible? Look at this New Testament emphasis. And like we've said, we're trying to change lives. We're not trying to learn facts. We're trying to change lives. And so here is the biblical emphasis placed on Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy. Look in verse 1, 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 1. He says, what happened to these people in the wilderness? That is parallel to what's happened to Christians. What happened to them? Verse 1 and 2, what happened? 1 Corinthians chapter 10, you got that? Page 1008. What happened to them? They were baptized, right? You see that emphasis? 1 Corinthians chapter 10, moreover, brethren, I don't want you to be unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized, the New King James says, into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. That's a New Testament emphasis. When I read this story in the Old Testament, I've got to see here's some people that are in bondage. Here's the Lamb of God that spares them, the blood of the Lamb. And here they are, and they're baptized. It's interesting, just in passing, to think about they were baptized into Moses. That's a strange concept. And yet that's what's happened. Prior to this time, they were into Egypt. Prior to this time, they were into Pharaoh. But it is interesting that when they cross the Red Sea, there is that transition, and that's what this word indicates, a moving from one place to another, from being here into here. Now, we're not baptized into Moses, right? What are we baptized into? Baptized into Christ. And so here is the biblical emphasis found in this, and that is, hey, folks, every one of these were baptized. They all ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock which followed them, and that rock was Christ. We don't even think about Christ being a part of all of these things transpiring out there in the wilderness. But since there is deity and since there is the Godhead, obviously Christ is there. Christ is there at the burning bush. It was not the Father that said, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. It was the Godhead that said that. It was God who said that. And so they're there and they're eating all of this spiritual food. Now, we think of the literal food. The name of that food they ate in the wilderness was what? What does manna mean? What is it? What is it? Manna. What does manna mean? What is it? It means manna. And that's what it means. That became the name of it. It's a word they coined, like we have coined words in generations past, whatchamacallit. There's a newer word that young people use today. Whatever. Whatever, right? You understand that phrase? I mean, it's that same kind of thing that just says, okay, whatever. And so hand me that whatchamacallit, hand me that tool, hand me that device. And so they came out, and here's all of this food that's there on the ground, and they said manna. And so here are these people who've been baptized in the cloud and in the... Harrison, I didn't know you were here tonight. I miss seeing you. I'm glad you're here tonight, okay? Is that all right that you're here? Have you been studying your Bible, Harrison? You know all of this without studying. Would you come over here for just a minute? I want you all to, and I don't want to make him more glorious than anybody else, but you know, I just think he's just exemplary of what we can do with our grandkids if we want to. Harrison, could you sing the books of the New Testament? Matthew, can you? Oh, I'm going to let you do it on the microphone if you don't sing it loud. Can you do it loud?
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Acts and Literature, wrong men, first and second, Corinthians, Grace and Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, first and second, Thessalonians, first and second, Timothy, Titus and Philemon, Hebrews, James, first and second, Peter, first and second, Sergeon, Jude and Revelation.
All right, okay. Now, folks, he's not that smart. But that's the way you learn it. And you know how many hours it takes to do that. I loved it last Sunday night when he did it for me. It was two Sunday nights ago. What? Cam cannot do it yet. And so Harrison, don't you give up on your dad. You try to teach him that, okay? But I loved Harrison last Sunday night when he said, Jude and emulations. I really like Jude and I was hoping he'd do that tonight. But he got it right tonight. Okay, I love that. And I don't want to center him out. There are some other parents doing some great things. But folks, it can be done. And if you don't know the books of the New Testament, then offer to babysit Harrison so Holly and Cam can go out on a date. I just think it has, just blessings all the way around. And let me just encourage you to do that kind of thing. I don't want to pick him out because there are others who have that ability, but just folks, don't give, you don't know them yet. Do you? Okay. That's great. That is great. Let's get back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Now here they are eating that food and drinking that water. And then look what happens. And see, here's the whole emphasis of what happens whenever they leave that land. And that's found in verse 6 that says, now wait a minute, there are some things that they did. Well, verse 6 says, these things became our example to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Well, what'd they do? Well, let's see. They became idolaters, verse 7. Verse 8, they committed fornication, sexual immorality. Verse 9, they tempted Christ. And verse 10, they murmured. Isn't that amazing? Complaining and murmuring placed right up there with the matter of idolatry and fornication. We're not on that page. You know, we're a long way from being on that page, and yet that's what they were doing. And the murmuring was against God, but it was more against God's servant Moses and Aaron, and just constant complaining about we don't like this food, we don't like this, and we don't like that. And so the statement then is, verse 11: all these things happen to them as examples, and they're written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. See, that's the Bible. That's why we've got Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. It's why it's there. And if we don't learn the lesson when we study these things as we go through these books, we're missing what this is all about. And that's, I think, part of the importance of what we're doing here. I mean, I think it's good to know that there are five sacrifices in the book of Leviticus. It's not as critical that we be able to say burnt offering and trespass offering and sin offering and thanksgiving offering and whatever that other offering is. It's not as critical that we know all five of those as it would be for the Jews, because they had to live by that. But we need to have that understanding. We need to understand about the Day of Atonement, when God on that one day every year remembered all of the sin. How would you like for God once a year to drum up every mistake you'd ever made in your life? That's an awareness of sin. And so whenever we get to Jeremiah 31, he says, their sins will I remember no more. Folks, that's us. That's not them. Every year, the 10th day of the 7th month, God was aware of all of their sins, conscious of them, because it's not possible for the blood of bulls and goats to do away with sin. And yet, we don't have that at all. And yet, here's the emphasis that there is in the New Testament in relationship to that. And so the details are not that critical, except they are that critical. And why do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God? Well, I know why you believe He's the Son of God. But do you know the details are as much a part of your faith as the reality of it? How long was He in the grave? You know, tell me about His crucifixion. How many crosses were there? How many words did He say? How many sentences did He utter while He was on the cross? How many loaves and how many fishes were involved in the feeding the multitude? How many people were fed in that? You see, those are just details, but it's those details that give substance and reality to the deity of Jesus. It's a picture of that event. And so that's really what we're trying to do as we go through the Old Testament, is to give ourselves a grasp of these things, so that whenever we read these verses about they murmured in the wilderness and all the rest, that we've got some substance in relationship to that. And especially when you get to the book of Hebrews, you'll not be able to understand the book of Hebrews if you don't know Leviticus and Deuteronomy. You just won't be able to do it. Look in Hebrews chapter 3. Let me show you the same emphasis in Hebrews chapter 3. Hebrews chapter 3 says, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, consider the apostle and high priest of our confession, Jesus Christ, who was faithful to him, who appointed him as Moses was faithful in all his house. For this one has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, inasmuch as he who built the house has more honor than the house. Every house is built by somebody. He who built all things is God. Look in verse 6. But Jesus as the Son over his own house. And in my Bible, I've got his house in verse 2 to talk about Moses. Well, of course, he's talking about Moses serving in God's house there. And then Jesus serving in his house in relationship to that. Now then, he says, the Holy Spirit says, verse 7. And here are quotations from the book of Psalms. If you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. In the days of trials in the wilderness, when your fathers tested me and tried me and saw my works 40 years, I was angry with that generation and said, they go always astray in their hearts and have not known my way. So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. You know what he's talking about? He's talking about Numbers chapter 20. He's on Numbers chapter 13 and 14, not 20, but 13 and 14, when the spies come back. It's important for us to know that event because that is a tremendous emphasis found in the book of Hebrews. That's the New Testament emphasis that comes out of the study of the Old Testament. And so whenever we read these things in the Old Testament, it's not just a bunch of stories about things that happened long ago and we're trying to memorize some of the details from those events. That's not what it's all, that's not what Soldiers of Christ is all about. Faith comes from hearing the Word of God. And I know the nature of God because I know these stories in the Old Testament. When God says to Jacob, I am the God of Abraham, I am the God of Isaac, and I am your God. He was saying, Jacob, think about all those stories you know about your grandfather Abraham. Think about all of the things that were in Abraham's life. And then in your father's life, and the how I was there. And he says, and Jacob, I will be your God. And then you get to Moses at the burning bush. At the burning bush, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. I am the I am. You know, this is who you're talking to. And see, that's us. It's important for me to know the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And the only way I know that is these stories that are there in the Old Testament. That's where I learned the very nature of God. And that's so critically important. But he said, they're not going to enter into my rest. Here's a great verse, verse 12, where some people say, well, once you're saved, you're always saved. Could not be if verse 12 has any meaning at all when he says, brethren. So now we know he's talking to Christians. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. I can do that. And I need to see all of those graves in that wilderness because it can happen to me. You know, hopefully you young people have never known a preacher that's fallen away from the Lord. Hopefully you don't have any illustration of that. Joe, how many do you know? Wow is right. You know? How many elders do you know that's fallen away? I know elders that's fallen away. Deacons that's fallen away in the Lord. Yes. And if it can happen to them, it can happen to me. If you'd been one of the 603,550, would you have made it into the promised land or not? You understand what I mean? Or you go along with peer pressure, what everybody wants, we can't do this, we'll just give up, we cannot do it. Where would you fit in that story? And so here is the New Testament emphasis on those Old Testament books. And we've got to get there. We've really got to get there. I want us to quickly look at one other thing. Look in Deuteronomy, go back to Deuteronomy, not 34, but go to chapter 31. Deuteronomy chapter 31. In verse 19, I want to show you something because it's an unknown entity that some people don't understand when they read the book of Revelation. In the book of Revelation, they sing the song of Moses and the Lamb. And our concept, what the song of Moses is when they crossed over the Red Sea. Listen to this. Write down this song for yourself and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths that this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. Verse 21, it shall be when many evils and troubles have come upon them that this song will testify against them as a witness. And so God says, Moses, you write down the song, you write down this song. And it is a song that they're to sing it and they're to teach this song to their children. And so Harrison, had you been a Jewish young boy, instead of singing, let us sing the books of Moses, you would be saying, let us sing the song of Moses. Because this is the song of Moses. And so he writes it down in verse 23. Therefore Moses wrote this song the same day and taught it to the children of Israel. Is it one other time in this chapter? Don't see it one other time. Yes. Verse 30. Then Moses spoke in the hearing of all of the assembly of Israel the words of this song until they were ended. And chapter 32 has the words of the song of Moses. You stand here, Stan. I thought I saw Stan here before. I challenge Aaron, Stan's son, since he's musically, you know, really got ability. I challenge Aaron to write a song having these words in it. And I challenge any of you young people, anybody that's musically inclined, to take the words of the song in chapter 32 and put it to music. You know, it's an amazing thing. And you don't have to get it word for word, but get the phrase and get the thought and put words to it. Because this is one of the most critical songs. Not Aaron, it was Ethan, right? I couldn't figure out. Jackie was shaking her head no, and I thought, it's not Aaron, it's Ethan. I challenge Ethan because he's got that musical ability. Ethan, why don't you take this song? And he told me he's working on it. I don't know how far along he is. But you can take it. This is one of the most important songs in the Bible. When you get to the end of the next chapter, in verse 44, so Moses came with Joshua the son of Nun and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people. And so here is the song of Moses. And we need to know the song of Moses. And it's so critical because God said, Moses said, here's the words, and you teach these words to your children. Then when you get to the book of Revelation, you've got the song of Moses. I know that Exodus 15, when they cross over the Red Sea, that Miriam is there and Moses there is a part of that song. But that's not the song found in the book of Revelation. Here's the song found in the book of Revelation. What is the song of Moses? Well, it has to do with the fact that Jehovah is God. That's the first verse of the song. He says, verse 4, he is the rock, his work is perfect. All of his ways are just, a God of truth and without injustice. Righteous and upright is he. They have corrupted themselves, they are not his children, because of their blemish. A perverse and crooked generation. Hello? A perverse and crooked generation? Does that have a New Testament ring to you? On the day of Pentecost, what did Peter say? With many other words did he testify and exhort, saying, save yourself from this perverse generation. You see, if the Jews have been singing this song, and it's not just found in that one place in the New Testament, it's found other places about this perverse generation. It's a part of the song of Moses. And so verse 1 is the very nature of God, and verse 2 is the sinfulness of man. Or I'm talking about not verse 2 in this, but verse 2 of the song, okay? Verse 3 of the song is found in verse 7. Verse 7 says, remember the days of old, consider the years of many generations. And so he began saying, this is what the Most High did. The Lord, he found them in verse 10. He found the Jews in a desert land, in the wasteland, in a howling wilderness. He encircled him, he instructed him, he kept him as the apple of his eye, as an eagle stirs up her nest, hovers over her young, spreading out her wings, taking them up, carrying them on its wing. So the Lord alone, led him, and there was no foreign God with him. He made him ride in the heights of heaven that he might eat the produce of the field, and he might draw honey out of the rock and oil from the flinty rock, curds from the cattle and milk from the flock, fats of lambs and the rams of the reed of Bashan and goats with the choicest wheat, and you drank wine, the blood of the grapes. All Moses is doing in the Song of Moses is saying, study Exodus, study Leviticus, study the wilderness, study the promised land. And all Moses is trying to do here in this passage is to do the very kinds of things that we try to do when we teach our children these Bible stories, so that they'll know that there's a real purpose in these Bible stories. And you ladies especially who teach those small children these Bible stories up and down the hallway, try to make an application of those stories that'll help them in their lives. It's not just Joseph being sold by his brother and being down there in the land of Egypt. It is God will take care of you. And that's what that story is all about. And David and Goliath, my oh my, God can use Davids in this world. Young boys, lads. You gotta get that. And that's what this song is all about. Here's the rest of the song, he says. Did I turn the page? Yes, verse 13. But Jeshurun, which is another name for Jerusalem, grew fat and kicked. And you know, this would be a great verse to write. You grew fat, you grew thick, you are obese. You know, you want to sing, be careful if you sing that to your wife. I would encourage you not to sing that to your husband either. He forsook God who made him and scornfully esteemed the rock of his salvation. They provoked him to jealousy with foreign gods. And verse 19 says, and when the Lord saw it, he spurned them. Anybody got the old King James? He abhorred them. What's this story about Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy? Here's what it's all about. God gave them the land that flowed with milk and honey, and they ate the curds from the cattle and milk from the rock, the fat of lambs, the rams, and the goats, and the choicest wheat, and the wine, the blood of the grapes. And you took it, and you got fat, and you turned against God. See, that's what Bible study is all about. We're not just in our Bible classes or when we're sitting down talking to our children about these Bible stories. We're not just sitting there just trying to learn a bunch of facts. Because, see, faith comes from hearing the Word of God. And let me just illustrate. Don't you, as a result of what we've just talked about, because we've been reading the Bible, not because Dan said it, because we look at 1 Corinthians 10 and look at Hebrews chapter 3, and now we're over here in the book of Deuteronomy. Don't you have a better understanding of God? Don't you have a better understanding of the relationship we need to have to God? Yeah. And that's what faith is. You know, faith is that understanding of God that allows me to trust God. And that's really what this is all about. We don't have time to sing the rest of the Song of Moses. I don't know if we'll have time at all. But would you do this? Would you sometime just sit down and read this song all the way through? Would you write the verses? And you know, I'm the one who arbitrarily says this is verse 1, this is verse 2, this is verse 3, verse 4. But would you just go through this and find those thoughts that are there, and then take that, because God said, you teach this song to your children. Because what we sing is a manifestation of our hearts. Is that amazing? It's a manifestation of our hearts. Is any merry? Let him sing. That's where his heart is. And we've got to understand that God wanted every Jewish boy and girl to be able to sing the Song of Moses. Because it has to do with how easy it is for us to fall away. We just can't afford to do it. At 15 years of age, you know, at 14, 15 years of age, you got too much invested in this. Already you've made choices in your life that other people don't understand. You got too much invested in this. And if you're 75 years of age, you've got a lifetime invested in this. And that's why he says, take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief. Think about everything Judas saw and the opportunity that Judas had, and he gave it all up. And if that kind of thing can happen to somebody who was right there in the very presence of Jesus and saw all of these things, and he himself cast out devils and cured lepers, and God used him to perform these miracles and perhaps even raise the dead. I believe when the 70 were sent out, they were given power to raise the dead. And so you'd think that at least the 12 would have that similar power when they were sent out. Imagine Judas having, by the power of God, raised the dead, lose his faith. You know what Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy is all about? Yeah. It's about Dan's life. It's Greg's life. You know, it's Timothy's life. It's Daniel's life. You know, it's Michelle and Tina and Bonnie, and we just go up and down, up and down. And the thing we've got to do is to take these things in the orange shirt. I guess that's orange, whatever color that is. What peach shirt? Not Jackie's peach, but the other one. But to take these lessons and put them in the hearts of those who are that young, and those who are this age, young people, teenagers. Listen to me. You're at that point in your life. You can't do this on your mom and daddy's faith. I don't care if your mom and dad do believe in God. I mean, I do care, but that's not going to get you to heaven. You know, you're not going to go to heaven because your mom and dad believe in God. It's got to be your faith. But you see, you got to be smart enough to look at the evidence. You got to look at this evidence that's there, and then make it your faith. And that's really the important part of it. And because it's not fun and games, it's life and death, it's eternity. Well, we didn't do any drills tonight, but I hope that we can understand the spiritual nature of what we're trying to have happen. Because I know, as a result of my life having been spent with and with David and working all of these things and reading through, you know how many times we read Genesis through Deuteronomy to put this study together? You know how many times we've gone through those chapters and verses again and again? We're doing the same thing now with the books of history. You know how much it's changing me? And that's what needs to happen to every one of us. I want us to have a closing prayer, and then let's all go to the four corners for our Cornerstone meetings. And the visitors, you're welcome to stay for Cornerstone meetings, by the way, and be a part of that.